Good afternoon, everyone. It's Adam from Ukrafoot 24 again with my 20th stop off. I've made the 20 now on my Welcome to Scotland series. I've come to one of the real positive, happy stories of this season, Livingston Football Club, and I'm really honoured and privileged today to sit down with the CEO of the club, John Ward. John, afternoon. First of all, thanks a lot so much for giving me your time today. And how are you over there?
Yeah, we're doing pretty good here today. It's been a busy week for us. We qualified for the Scottish League Cup final on Sunday, and then we appointed our assistant manager in the manager's role, and he had a hearing this morning to deem whether he was a fit and proper person for football because he had a previous conviction when he was a younger guy. So that went in our favour this morning. So it's been a good couple of days to be involved with Livingston.
I think, well, you say a good couple of days. I think it's been a great few months over there. First of all, it's been absolutely incredible to watch the run you've been going on. Was it, you know, 11 league games? Is it now undefeated? Something like that.
It's eight league games and three cup games undefeated. Yeah.
Okay, and that was it. And yeah, I watched the two Celtic games, and to be perfectly honest, I think you deserve the victory in them.
We could certainly, we wouldn't have been disgraced coming away with 3 points for one of them. Yeah, but it was very satisfying. But I always have mixed feelings because I grew up a Celtic supporter as a young boy and was a season ticket holder up until I got involved with Livingston. So I still have a lot of time for Celtic. And,
fair enough.
Mixed emotions.
Look, so as you said there, you grew up as a Celtic fan. How did your relationship first start with Livingston Football Club then?
I had a business based in Livingston called Fast Tech, and we basically were around the corner from the football ground. And our customers, we supplied the aerospace and defence industry, so our customers were big multinational companies. And of course, our competitors were big multinational companies, but we were good at what we'd done. And what essentially happened was we'd have customers want to come and visit and audit us, and we had very, very limited facilities around how we could, you know, where they could do that and how they could sort of access the building and all that kind of stuff. So we used to use Livingston Football Club because it was virtually right next door. And Livingston were just in our, this is probably, well, I guess, 13, 14 years ago, so Livingston Stadium was fairly new. They were doing okay. And we would give customers a quick tour of the building and then go down to Livingston and do a presentation and have lunch in the boardroom, et cetera, et cetera. So that's when I first got involved with them.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I'm going to show my age a bit here, but obviously when I was little, I knew of Meadowbank, and then all of a sudden it became Livingston sort of, I can't remember now if it was the late 80s, early 90s. How did that all, I mean, it might be before your time, and fair enough if it is, but how did that all come about? Did the club relocate to Livingston? Was it already based in Livingston?
Yeah. No. So Meadowbank is a suburb of Edinburgh. There was a Meadowbank Stadium was built for the Commonwealth Games about 70 or 60 years ago. And Meadowbank Thistle were the local team. And this was one of the reasons we got involved with them. Meadowbank were actually Ferranti, who were a massive defence contractor based in Edinburgh. They are still there now, but they're owned by Leonardo, who are a multinational Italian company. So they were Ferranti's work team. And then they basically became Meadowbank. They qualified for the Football League, etc. But they had an old kind of ramshackle stadium and limited fans. I mean, Meadowbank Thistle Stadium is probably less than a mile from Hibernian's ground. So, you know, they just didn't have a big fan base. And I think Livingston had been a new town. So lots of people from Glasgow and Edinburgh and whatever were housed there. And I think the opportunity was the council agreed that they would build a stadium if Meadowbank came out and became Livingston. And that's effectively what happened. So that's 20 odd years ago, I think, that happened.
Fair enough then. Now, I mean, I've been past Livingston a few times on the motorway going between Edinburgh and Glasgow myself. But for people, we do get a lot of listeners out in Ukraine. Can you just put Livingston in context between Edinburgh and Glasgow for people there?
So Livingston is in the central belt of Scotland, so it's basically almost halfway between Glasgow and Edinburgh, a wee bit more closer to Edinburgh, but there's a main motorway links the two cities, the M8, and Livingston as a town sits on that. So it's a very easy place to get to, and it's, as I say, right in central Scotland. So from Livingston, there's probably nowhere in Scotland that you can't travel to in sort of 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Who are your closest rivals there, you know, since you've moved out to Livingston?
There's always, I think because they came from Edinburgh, there's always a bit of enjoyment when they play Hearts and Hibs for that matter. So the fans seem to like that. But of course, we've been in lower divisions for quite a lot of the time. So it's we don't necessarily have a derby type club.
I mean, I have to ask as well, because it's something that's cropped up in sort of previous episodes. What's been, I'm going to use the word the hold of, it might not be the right word, but what is the hold of the Old Firm over the town of Livingston in general? Now, do you have to compete, how well do you have to compete with Glasgow and Celtic for support in the town?
We will have more fans going to see Celtic, more fans going to see Rangers, more fans going to see Hearts, and more fans going to see Hibs from Livingston than actually come to Livingston games. And I think that's been a legacy thing. You know, the Celtic Rangers divide is kind of along sectarian lines, as is Hearts Hibs, or was in the past. So there's a lot of that kind of still exists in Scotland. It's diminishing, thankfully. And we are, I first went along to Livingston when my children were young, when my boys were young, because the club were very good at that time in engaging with schools and giving free tickets to local schools, etc. So we've kicked that off on again since I've been involved, and we're very, very focused on doing that and getting young kids, from the local area, because West Lothian is quite a big area, the council area that Livingston sits in. And we're very engaged in trying to get kids along, or we were pre-COVID.
Yeah, of course, we'll come on to that later. Of course, COVID's got this big iron grip over everybody at the moment, sadly. But so have you noticed that then? Is your fan base quite a young fan base, shall we say, with almost second generation Livingstonians, for want of a better phrase? Does that make up the main sort of supporter base, would you say?
No, really, it's fairly mixed. There's a lot of guys my age and older. I think they just adopted the club when the club came to Livingston. So we have something like 1,100 season ticket holders. And, you know, if we're doing well, and certainly we go back-to-back promotions and we're in the Premier League now, so we get a lot of kind of locals coming along to the odd game because they know that there's normally tickets available in the moment.
I was going to ask you about it. I mean, It's been a bit of a topsy-turvy history, hasn't it? You have, over the sort of 20, 30 years you've been in Livingston, you've had your successful moments there, isn't it? Was it 17 years ago you were in the cup final and you'd been in the Premiership before? What have been the highlights for the club since you've been there?
Before my time, Livingston, I think football tends to attract... it tends to attract Del Boy type characters or guys who've made a few quid and you know, basically want to be a wee bit famous. So Livingston has attracted people like that in the past. And particularly 2004, when we previously won this cup, they had investment from, you know, businessmen, and the club was basically buying success. They were paying very high wages, and you know, they were. I wasn't even really paying a lot of attention at that time. But it transpired, and I only really learned this in the last couple of days, is when Livingston qualified for the final that they won, they went into administration the day before. They won that trophy previously whilst they were in administration, and of course didn't benefit from the prize money or anything, because that went to the creditors. So... I think for me, I got involved with Livingston was an administration back then, and then they were in administration again in, I think, 2011, something like that, 2012. Mm-hmm. I'm not absolutely nailed on with the dates. No, sorry, maybe before that, 2009-10. And that's when I really got involved with them. We still had the business around the corner, but they started that season. There had been a couple of Italian guys come in, taking the club over, and essentially pillaged it. I mean, I think they took over the club with debts of about 300 grand, and they left with debts of about 1.75 million. And I don't think they paid a bill in the whole time they were there. And essentially, the club went into administration for a second time under the stewardship of these guys. And that's when we got involved, because the season that they went into administration, they started the league in the bottom tier. They were relegated to the bottom tier. And they started that season with no shirt sponsor. Mm. And because we'd had an association with them and a bit of soft spot for them, my sales director at the time was quite friendly with some of the staff at Livingston. And she came in and said, we should really have a look at Livingston and look at sponsoring them. And we did that. So my business, Fastec, we sponsored them for 3-4 years. So I got to know the kind of board then, and I got involved there, was going to look at, you know, going to look at games and when Celtic weren't playing. And yeah, that sort of started us off. And we had a developed quite a good relationship then. And then I sold my business, and I ended up working for a large American company. So I had been working in London and came back up to Scotland, and was helping my son set up a business called Crafty Brew. He'd been in Australia and was really caught up in the whole the craft lager and craft beer type thing. So we had a business called Crafty. He had a business called Crafty Brew, and Livingston got back in touch and said, look, we're having difficulties. We've got guys fighting in court again. Our main sponsor's pulled out because there's no liking the publicity. And, you know, would you like to step in again? And I sort of said, well, I don't really have a business, but I spoke to Michael, my son, and we became shirt sponsors for that season as Crafty Brew. And during that season, I was going along to games, and you could tell it was being run. So the guys that owned the club were not involved in it day to day. They'd all had a falling out. And it was being run essentially by 3 or 4 guys who were fans. And the club secretary was a really nice guy called Brian Ewing. And Brian would speak to me during games and say, you know, we're struggling a wee bit with our financials, we're struggling a bit with accounts, we could do with a bit of help. And because I was on, I'd left the American company by this time and was on garden leave, I thought, well, I'll get involved and, you know, help out a bit and, you know, at least get them on a solid footing in terms of their accounting and their, you know, management accounts and all that kind of stuff. And that's essentially when I got involved. So that was 2015-16. And just as I got involved, I think I got involved in the March, and the club were relegated to Division One from the Championship just at the end of that season. And that's effectively when I got involved, on a sort of day-to-day basis. We decided to keep the club full-time, and we would keep David Hopkin, who was the manager at that time, and David Martindale, who's the manager now, he was his assistant. We kept them in place, kept the team full-time, and really had a go at Championship. Really had a go at winning that league and getting back to Championship, which we did. And then we went to the Premier League the following year. So we took a step back to take a couple of steps forward.
I mean, I'm listening to you there, and you're talking about, should we say, some of the difficulties perceived in your era. Has that shaped the club philosophy over the last, 6 years now that you've been involved in the club? Is it that building on a stable and steady footing to move forward? Is that the way the club mentality is now, or is there a different perspective?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. I mean, I think, you know, we were the way that the playoffs are structured in Scotland, it's always kind of skewed in favour of the Premiership team that finishes second bottom. So what essentially happens is, you know, the top three, the second, third and fourth in the Championship all have to play each other a couple of times. And, you know, there's away legs and home legs and that kind of stuff. But by the time you meet the second bottom team for the Premiership, you know, you've already had 4 tough games, really. But we were really not expecting to beat Partick Thistle from the Premiership over two legs. And we did, and it was at a time where we'd arranged to get involved with the community. We'd arranged that we would put down an artificial pitch because we were trying to get kids in and trying to get the community more involved with the club. That was something that I was very focused on. And we also had 2 stands that hadn't been used in 5-6 years, so they were essentially derelict. So the now manager, Dave Martindale, and I, we basically come up with a plan. We pulled in favours. We, you know, he worked on it himself because David has a building background. And we essentially rebuilt the stands after doing the sums to say if we get Rangers and Celtic in here a couple of times a year, that will pay for the work we've got to do just now. So we have very much since then lived within our means. And that's what's so amazing about the run we're on just now, the fact that we finished fifth in the league last year, where we're probably the lowest budget. And, you know, that we're now in the League Cup final, again, living within our means and doing some amazing stuff with players that, you know, that have stepped up and are really, really showing their worth on the field.
And I'm going to take a step to the right now, shall we say. And I've got to ask you about the community stuff there that you say you've mentioned there just with the schools. Is it one of the key, shall we say, principles of Livingston Football Club to reach out to the community and help support community growth? And what is the club doing? Can you share some examples with us?
We're very much focused on community. I don't live in Livingston, but I live in the town next to it and grew up in this area. And, you know, there's quite a lot of poverty in this area. There's quite a lot of issues around education. And that's a subject that's very, very close to my heart. I'm involved in the judicial system for children up here on a voluntary basis. And one of the things that seemed strange to me when I went back into Livingston was we literally had very few young fans. The pitch was basically, the stadium was a white elephant. I mean, it sits in the right bang in the centre of the town. But there would be days I'd be the only person in if the team weren't training. So, you know, it was a place that was not being utilised. It's a fabulous facility, but it wasn't being used. And we decided that we would engage with our local, the West Lothian Youth Foundation, who basically were using, they managed the parks and did community work next to where we were. So they got involved and we'd done joint applications for grants to get the new pitch laid. We'd had a grass pitch, but where Livingston sits, if there's snow, it gets lots of snow. If there's rain, it retains itself on the pitch. So we would lose that season before we'd done that, when we were in the championship, we lost about 70 grand in gate money because we had two games that had to be postponed because the pitches were frozen or the pitches were muddy or whatever. We just felt if we could get the AstroTurf, or we could get the 4G pitch down, we would have community involvement, we would get utilisation of it, and it would be getting used every day. And before COVID kicked in, we were getting 500 to 700 kids coming through the building every week. So that's, you know, it's now become a focal part of the town, which is fabulous.
Oh, that's wonderful. That really is. And has those actions that you've took, has it had a kick-on effect with the team? Did you see sort of, you know, attendances improve, more people getting behind the club, and did the support grow as a consequence?
It started to, and you're now seeing kids, kids when you're in the shopping areas, etc., with Livingston tops on rather than Celtic, Rangers, Hibs and Hearts tops on. So that's really gratifying. And we have got the run we're on just now. Hopefully when kids are back at school and COVID's out the way, we can use this current team and their success and, you know, hopefully we win the cup to get into schools and develop that further. We've also just partnered with a local children's football coaching business called Football Buzz, and they are going to be advocating or going out and representing Livingston around the schools and encouraging children to take up football and encouraging children to keep active and you know, take up sport, etc. The Youth Foundation does similar work with older people, so they have walk-in football, they have they even have groups where people with dementia and Alzheimer's and stuff will meet and talk about the past, talk about, come to the stadium and do that kind of stuff. So there's lots of really good work being done in the community.
Oh, that's great to hear. It really is. And I mean, what is the interaction like between yourselves and the supporter groups now? Is there a good relationship there? Do are they active in the running of the club? Like you said before, it was kind of a bit, shall we say, too controlled by them. But now is there still a good relationship there?
We have a good relationship. Our fans are really, really good people. When the pandemic kicked in, I mean, we had no idea how we were going to survive how long it was going to be, etc., etc. You know, sponsorship died off. We're reliant. If we have a home game against Celtic or Rangers, that can bring us in £150,000-£160,000. So, you know, we're budgeting to lose sort of or to have probably £1.5 million income that we won't get this year. Our fans immediately stepped up, and a lot of them pledged that they would give a fiver, 20 quid, 25 quid every month for 18 months, to the extent that, you know, given we only have 1,000 season ticket holders, we had been pledged, I think, just under £90,000.
Wow.
And that takes us through to the end of this season, and that's all coming for fans. So it would be quite incredible. We kept the stadium open when we had to furlough the players when the pandemic first struck, and we have a chef, Maureen. She stayed in. She worked right through the pandemic and basically made meals for charities and local care homes and whatever else. So we put out over 5,000 meals during the first sort of 3 or 4 months of lockdown. And fans helped with that and got involved with that and donated to that. So yeah, the community thing is really something in this area.
And that's great. I mean, I've got to put my football fan hat on with you as well, John. I've got to say, what's the atmosphere pre-COVID, of course? What was the atmosphere like on match day? Did the supporters make a good racket in there? Have you got any good active supporter groups?
Yeah, there's a real good buzz about the stadium, and you know we have a bunch of guys that they call themselves the Drumbeat Mafia, so they were bringing drums in and making a hell of a lot of noise when the team were playing. Of course, the economics of the size of your club means that if we're playing a big team, a Rangers or a Celtic, Aberdeen, Hearts, there are far more of their fans in the stadium than ours. So we basically have the main stand, and then we'll allocate tickets or the other free stands to the away support if it's big enough. So quite often, if we're playing Celtic and Rangers, you know, and we've had some good results against Celtic and Rangers over the sort of time we've been up in the Premiership. And the atmosphere is fabulous because the noise from their fans is obviously deafening, but you can still hear our guys, or where I sit, you can still hear our guys, you know, competing with that, which is fabulous.
Oh, that is superb. Do you think that, I've just runs through my head, you know, when you've got a home match where 3/4 of the ground are cheering on the opposition, is there this real sort of hard work team collective spirit then that you feel runs through the club that drives the team onto this to these results? And do you think it's something that David has sort of driven on, worked on this year, that's helped the club go on this run that it's been going on?
I think so the first part of that is, it's worse than the other three stands all being full of away supporters, because we also have, because we only have 1,000 or 1,100 season ticket holders, our main stand seats 2,500. So what we find is that we'll have Rangers and Celtic fans buying tickets for that area as well. So, but our fans are fairly pragmatic and take it on the chin and just take the view that it's money coming into the club, it helps us keep running, we'll just love it. There's never any kind of sort of hostile atmosphere or any of that kind of thing. In terms of the players, we have guys that's been with us since we were relegated to Division One. I'm a football fan, so I would never pretend to know anything about, you know, the how you train players and tactics and all that kind of stuff. But what I do see is when we bring players in, we don't just focus on the football training. You see players, they're in the gym. They're working extra time. We've have nutrition programs for them. There's ice bath stuff going on. So we've got even when we were a small provincial club, we still had a professional attitude to that. And you can see the development and difference in the players. It's just quite incredible. Emmanuel Thomas come to us from QPR not that long ago. And the difference in him and the difference in his speed and the difference in his physique just in the few months he's been at Livingston is absolutely noticeable when you're watching the game.
I agree completely. It's been great watching him. The other guy I really enjoyed watching on, was it Wednesday night, Kieran Brown. What a phenomenal fullback you've got there up from Cardiff. I'll be keeping an eye on him, definitely.
Kieran, that's his second time with us on loan. Mm-hmm. He came out. We had a first year in the Premiership. We had a winter camp out in Portugal, and I happened to be in London on business and took a flight out with Kieran. He was coming out to basically so the manager could have a look at him, and that was the first I'd met him. And we shared that. We obviously shared the flight, and then we had a journey up to the training camp. And, you know, he's just come across as a really level-headed, smart guy. And he's consistently good every single game he plays for us. He's a really nice guy, Kieran.
Oh, that's good to hear. I mean, I've got to ask you as well. I mean, although I've been past Livingston, I've never been in there. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people listening to this as well probably haven't been to Livingston. Are there any places you'd recommend to listeners to, you know, we're talking post-COVID now and when we've got supporters back in the game. And I'm pretty certain that we're going to see attendances skyrocket when supporters are allowed back.
Right.
So everybody's
right.
Absolutely desperate to get back.
Absolutely.
What places would you scream out to people as must visits around the stadium to maybe meet Livingston supporters, to get a bit of the normal vibe before the game? Where would you say go to?
So we're right in the town centre. So basically at the south stand, there's a set of stairs that you go up and they take you virtually into the shopping area. So we have three massive indoor shopping centres in Livingston, a designer outlet, then we have a fairly upmarket area, then we have the old centre, and they're all kind of joined on each other. Lots of good eating places, lots of good pubs. That's a really good area. And we also have a bar in the stadium, which is open to the fans. So that's open before the game. We have a partner company who rent, called Food Creations, who rent part of the stadium. And they're Livingston and West Lothian's biggest kind of wedding venue. And that's part of the stadium. That's been converted very nicely underneath the south stand. So Simon always has something on. A guy called Simon Priest runs it, Welsh guy, and he always has something on for fans. So again, he'll welcome away fans in there. You can go in and have something to eat and have a couple of drinks before the game. So people are very well catered for around in and around the stadium.
Ah, that's good to hear. I've got to ask you as well, we've spoken a lot about Livingston, but as we can take it from the CEO perspective, if you wish, or as a fan's perspective, because you've been there as a fan as well. Over time, can you give me two or three places that you really look forward to visiting with Livingston during the season? You know, other places around Scotland as well. It's something I ask all my guests.
Yeah, I mean, there's some beautiful places in Scotland, and we've had some interesting away days, shall we say. Our Brothes are always exciting to go to because the stadium sits right on the coast. I quite like going to Dundee because I spent a lot of time there as a student. There's Aberdeen's a good visit as well. You're quite near the sea, but their stadium. In terms of an away day, I always look forward to Celtic and Rangers game because they do hospitality very well. They're incredibly professional as businesses, and it's just a really enjoyable day out. So it's the away day experience is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I've got to say, I think if I tallied up all 20 episodes so far, Arbroath is in the lead as the most popular place to visit.
Yeah, it's a cracking place. I mean, it's just a really nice wee ground. It's where it's pitched. It's right on the seafront. I always like going to Arbroath. And it's got a cracking chip shop just across the road for it. So.
Oh, superb. Even better. I mean, this last thing I just want to touch on with you today, John. Mentioning Arbroath, it's a good little sort of tie into it. They had that big video clip on Venezuelan media last week. They put a clip out on the football news in Venezuela of Bobby Lynn getting soaked by the North Sea, taking a corner at the ground. it's fantastic. I'll send it to you afterwards. On Twitter. how do you feel Scottish football is presented in the media in general? We can take the Scottish media and the English media separately if you want, or you can take it as a whole thing.
I think Scottish football is much better than it's portrayed in the media. There's no question about that. There's some really good football played up here. the fact that, you know, we've had players come through the south and done very well in Scotland. We've equally had players from Scotland go down and play very well in the south. I think we, you know, in Scotland, and in the Scottish media, football's an obsession. I mean, it's you know, there is. I was quite staggered by the amount of publicity our manager's case had generated, and the amount of different shows that I've been asked to go on that are basically football specific. Different radio shows. There must be 5-6 radio shows every single night that's dedicated to football, and for an hour or 2 hours or whatever. And you know, it's becoming more and more prevalent. Sky, the deal with Sky that was struck by the SPFL has been excellent in my opinion. Sky are really giving Scottish football some great PR. They're doing lots of positive stuff around it. They're, especially during the pandemic, it really does get you through quite a lot of nights, the fact that there's football on, whether it be English Championship or Scottish stuff. We're getting Championship football on up here as well. So, you know, I'm old enough to remember that your weekly digest of football was half an hour on a Saturday night, and that was all the football that you ever got on TV. Mm-hmm. And that was exciting. You know, you'd get to as a kid, I'd get to stay up to watch that. So I think it's fabulous, the amount of coverage that we get. And you know, Scottish football is steadily making its way up there. Our national team's doing quite well. You know, we've qualified for if the Championship ever happens, the Euro Championship ever happens, we've qualified. So yeah, it's a good thing to be involved in football.
Certainly is, I've got to say, with the work I've been doing this year, I can see I've got a lot of good young prospects as well. The future looks very strong for Scottish football. Yes. There's a lot of good young guys making their breakthroughs last season or this season as well. So, yeah, I agree with you fully there. Well, John, I know you're a busy man, very busy man up there. You've got lots to do. Once again, huge thank you for today. I've really enjoyed it. For people who haven't yet been able to follow the Livingston story and, you know, want to follow what's going on, what are the best social media outlets to jump on to find out all things Livingston?
Our own website, livingstonfc.co.uk, has got quite a lot of decent links on it. There's lots of news on it and lots of clips and whatever else. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, all the usual kind of social media channels. And we do have a lot. One of the good things from the pandemic in terms of coverage is we have Livy TV. Like most clubs, we are able to stream our home games out to fans. So our season tickets our season ticket holders benefit from being able to stream the games live. Anybody can watch those games. I think there's a subscription, sort of £15 or £16 per game. But you know, it's a good place to get involved in Scottish football if you can.
Ah, that's excellent. So it's been another great episode today. Well, I'm getting a little bit of feedback off my own microphone there, people. Sorry about that. Well, that's it for today. It's been another great episode. I've really enjoyed talking with John today. So once again, thank you for that. And to everyone at home, I'm Adam from HooperFoot24. You can follow me on all the social medias as always. And good old Adam myself on LinkedIn. So till next time, everybody, take care and goodbye for now.